It is a great pleasure to welcome to European Investing Summit 2022 returning MOI Global instructor Louis Darvieux of Amiral Gestion. Louis joined Amiral in 2005 and serves as a fund manager for the Sextant Funds. Run by Julien Lepage, Amiral is an independent asset management firm based in Paris with a fundamental investing approach. Its goal is to deliver high and sustained performance over the long run and to support businesses in a responsible manner. As I'm sure many of you know, Louis has been a regular speaker at this event. We are grateful, Louis, that you are taking the time to be with us again this year. I'd like to turn it to you now. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, John. So it's a pleasure to be here again. Unusual situation this year, as I am basically talking about the same company as last year. Why so? Because like situation has not changed much on any front, either business or on from financial results perspective, or even on the stock market. So I still find the situation extremely interesting as a business case, and the investment case has just strengthened in my view. So I am kind of using both updating the presentation of last year, also sharing some of the work one of my colleagues did to present the idea again in another conference this year, I'm still very excited about that idea as a management apparently, because he kept buying shares back on the market this year, as we will see. So I'm beginning with like kind of feedback about the profile of the company. You have three divisions, which are which makes quite a unique profile. So the first division, products and solutions, is basically a distribution business, 80 distribution business for corporates, strong market position, resilient earnings, growing earnings over the last years, a segment which went through zero issue. It's a low margin business, but a high return capital employed business. So a very decent quality business, and lots of synergies with the other businesses. Anyway, they are quite strong. They are number two in France. So a pretty robust position. So second division, so is a financing division. So basically, they finance big fleets of IT equipment for big corporates, and you have more and more value-added services, especially in terms of reconditioning and recycling, which is becoming something extremely central for corporates because of the environmental pressure. So that's really a big growth driver, and they have the know-how and the position to deliver very good performance in terms of CO2 emissions, thanks to those recycling and reconditioning know-how. So obviously financing is always something we can be afraid about because of the balance sheet risk. They refinance more than 90% of their fleet. Then they keep some stuff on their balance sheet. They have a very long history doing that, 20 years history, 20 years, maybe 50 years history doing that, never got any issue. Very conservative in terms of management of residual values on their balance sheet. So they on average managed to sell stuff at twice was what was valued in the balance sheet. So no issue whatsoever there. But quite significant barriers to entry, because all that requires lots of know-how and relationships. So you have long-term contracts with corporates. So you have it's probably the division where you have the highest barriers to entry. What's interesting as well is that it's also a division which suffered from the state-backed, state-guaranteed loan during COVID, but which should benefit from higher interest rates. It's clearly something which in current environment is more attractive than ever again for corporates. Third division, IT services, so more classical IT services. Focused on workspace management and some digitalization work. So this part is obviously more cyclical and more comparable to what you find on the market, like any IT service company, small mid-cap in Europe. So very classical stuff. And basically, you want to occupy your workforce as much as possible. And to have the highest price possible for your guys. So here basically they are currently at normative situation in terms of margin. It's a division which came from acquisitions over time and which tended to be under profitable. A few years back, but it has been very well restructured, and now it has a normative margin. So three divisions, about the same size in terms of profits, and all have been either going at a very smooth earnings profile recent years, like products and solutions, or I've gone through some issues in terms of management or external shock like TMF, and I've been like more restructured like services within a very benign external environment for IT services in recent years. So in a few words, that's the profile of the company, which in my view makes it somewhat more resilient to any risk of recession than your average IT service company, especially thanks to the second division, TMF, which is much more recurring in nature and is also benefiting historically from tough times. So it's even anti-cyclical. So this is something which is quite interesting in my view, in a slowing environment. Just in terms of geographies, to give an idea of the geographies of the company, basically you are 50% France, 25% north of Europe, mainly Belgium, Netherlands, and 25% Southern Europe, Italy, Spain. So what makes it interesting? So basically, I first presented that table on page 3 last year, when 2021 was only an estimate at that point. What's interesting is that the drivers I presented last year are more present than ever. So the main thing is to look at the capital allocation of the company and to see that a huge amount has been given back to shareholders in the last 5 years in terms of buybacks and dividends. So on the current market price, you can see the dividend this year has been like 5%. Sorry, has been like 5%, was close to that number already last 4 years. But on top of that, you have had a big buybacks activity, 4% in 19, 4% in 20, 11% in 21. So far this year, 4%, but this number will increase again. 4% was at the end of H1. It's only by a coincidence that it's the same number at 19 and 20, but it's not. It's only a coincidence. The company has already flagged that they have they will publish their results earlier in Q3. Their Q3 number will be published earlier, probably because they want to buy shares back again, given current interesting price. So this number for 2022 will increase, and so the number of shares will keep going down. Dividends will be sustained, and I will explain why I think over the cycles, the current shareholder remuneration should stay as it is. So so the main reason is like the net debt is completely sustainable because like in the net debt you have financial net debt and then you have factoring that we consider as net debt. What's important to know is that the factoring number is more than covered by the contracts that the company has in its leasing division TMF. So as I mentioned, a part of that division financing is on the balance sheet and is financed by factoring. So basically they have those leasing revenues to pay for the factoring. So you don't have a big risk there. And so remaining net debt for 2022, obviously is an estimate. It may be lower, it may be a bit higher depending on working capital movements, but they are on track for that kind of figure, which is quite very manageable. And so basically at the end of the day, in the EV, we are adding some provisions to be more on the safe side and conservative side. So we are adding basically all the provisions plus the valuation of the minorities to be consistent with the EBIT number. We include all minorities stakes. And so basically you end up with a like 6x EBIT company. Even more interesting, you end up with something which is like last year, a 15% sustainable free cash flow yield, plus or minus the working capital fluctuations, which can be quite significant from one year to the other because of the TMF division. But overall, the economic value generation is around like 15% or more, between 15 and 20% of the current market cap. And as you can see, it's more or less what you get back. So I don't know the exact number, obviously, for 2022. What happened in 2022 also is that the stock price was a bit had gone up at the beginning of the year. So they kind of stopped the buybacks at some point, but they are catching up. They will be catching up very soon by the end of the year at current prices. So they are also price dependent, which is also quite positive. I mean, but they had slowed down at some point. What I think is that if they don't buy back as much in 2022, or if price is going up, maybe they will raise the dividend. It's already what happened this year. But overall, you have a 15%+ free cash flow on your stock, which will be mostly given back to shareholders, and the rest will maybe use for acquisitions. So extremely interesting valuation in my view, again, for somewhat resilient business, at least part of it. So why is it so, kind of the same reasons I gave last year, but some disappeared in the meantime. Last year, I also mentioned the issues they had in Italy in 18, but now it's already behind us and the business has been fully back on track for now some time. So it's not a reason anymore. Also, what remains is it's a somewhat complex company with several divisions. They are listed in Belgium, and while there are many focus on France, and then sell-side analysts are still very skeptical without any good reason, in my view, and they don't seem to follow the company very closely, as for instance, some of them don't even take repurchased shares into account. So they keep giving the numbers as if 20% of the capital was not in treasury shares. They don't adjust the numbers. They don't even mention it. So that's a bit crazy in my view. Also, just to go even further back, so that's the illustration my colleague did this year. It used to be a darling company on the stock market when everything was going fine. The previous 10 years, strong organic growth, strong acquisition history. And so the EBIT multiple was very high in 17, close to triple the current one. Then, obviously, they had those challenges I mentioned, the biggest one being the transition in management from the founder to the son, which was ill-prepared and which was a mistake. But the mistake was corrected in only 15 months, which is quite good, in terms of reaction, but obviously it created lots of issues within the company. On top of that, you had that issue in Italy with the former management, which is also now back on track. But overall, what's interesting is that you can see so EBIT line, which has been pretty resilient. We will be at close to 150 million EBIT in 2022, despite, which is close to the record number of 2017, despite lots of divestitures since then, a few acquisitions still, but more divestitures than acquisitions. So meaning they were able to deleverage the company, and so it shows that the underlying business has been growing in terms of earnings even since 2017, when we take into account the divestitures which happened. So it means that the underlying business is very healthy, attractive, and has been growing. So no real underlying issue beyond those management one. And so obviously that huge cash generation, which enabled to deleverage, do lots of buybacks and dividends, and which is like sustainable. It was not like any one-offs. So as I mentioned again, profitability has been very resilient, taking into account that you have had divestitures over the period. It's clear that the underlying profitability has been growing. Maybe you can notice that TMF is kind of the exception. Like TMF has been has had lower profitability, which is linked to the fact that in 2021, they were managing the business like at only for margins to accelerate the deleveraging. But they, since mid-2021, they are in growth mode again. So using a bit more their balance sheet again and hiring again more in their main geographies. So the business is growing around 10% currently. And so those numbers, those 40 million EBIT number for TMF should improve as early as 2022, but should keep improve for the next year, especially since, as I mentioned, rising interest rates are quite positive for the business. So one issue I have to mention is that Laurent Roudil just left a few days ago. Laurent Roudil was the head of the service division. So he managed to restructure that division and to make it profitable. So obviously on that graph, it may seem to be stagnating, but they have sold a lot of companies within the division over the last 4 or 5 years. So underlying has been a huge improvement in profitability. So it's something he had been able to manage. So the fact he leaves is a pity, especially since he was supposed to become the next CEO after the current founder Bouchard, as Bouchard has given up on giving the company to his son. So the fact that Bouchard is 80 years old, so it was interesting to have Laurent Roudil, who was a proved operator, as a successor. So obviously it's a big question mark. Why is he leaving? I have not talked to him yet, because as I mentioned, it was only a few days ago. My guess, it's only my personal guess, but my guess and my feeling is that he would have loved probably to put in place a development plan for the next 5 years over the main divisions, and to be quite ambitious in terms of development. While I think that the founder Jean-Louis Bouchard, 80 years old, may have other plans. So I don't know if it's to maybe if he has an horizon to sell the company, maybe in the midterm. But if they just disagreed on the development plan. But anyway, I mean, for the thesis, it should not be a big impact. Why? Because the thesis at this price is really to say, okay, you have over the cycle 15% sustainable free cash flow that can be given back to shareholders, which makes it quite extraordinary on the market now. And you have like a cautious capital allocation. So dividends come first, buybacks come second, when the price is right, and acquisitions come third. So it's very healthy, I mean, to in terms of value proposition. So for that context, I mean, if the company is less aggressive in terms of growth, it's not valued as a growth company by very far. So anyway, I mean, at that current 6x EBIT, 15% sustainable free cash flow valuation, we don't have it's not a big issue for me. But obviously, I would have preferred him to stay because he had proven himself over the last years. So that's something to keep in mind. But I mean, otherwise, the thesis is still very strong, in my opinion, and even cheaper than last year, with even more proof of the resilience of the business, of the ability of the company to grow again its TMF business, and also its consistency in terms of shareholder returns. So that's why I wanted to share it again, and I welcome any questions, any feedbacks, and obviously if some people I want to know more about the company. I was in touch this year with one or two people after the conference. Very happy to discuss again and to share any more details about each of the business and the company overall.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Luis, for this presentation. Perhaps a question on the founder who purchased stock in 2018 and 2020. How much does the founder own roughly in total? And would you expect additional purchases in light of the valuation here? And do you have any thoughts on the founder's intentions with the company going forward?
Yeah, so the founder, when you if you suppose like that the treasury shares will be cancelled, the founder has 50 more than 50% again of the company. So I don't know if he wants to keep buying himself like he did twice in recent years. It was not in the market. He did that taking advantage of especially in 2020 of long-term partner which was there for 15 years and sold his shares. So he was able to buy them back during the COVID crisis. So he's not active in the market. So he let the company be active in the market. So he's getting diluted himself through the buyback program of the company. So that's the first point. The second point is that in terms of his intentions, I think that it's safe to say that it will probably be more of the same as the last 5 years, because like the period when they bought many like startups and so in 2012, 2017. So those purchases were driven mostly by his son. It had not been a bad track record either, because they managed to sell those companies back last 5 years at good prices. So it was not stupid. But I mean, it was not his strategy. So from him, I expect more of the same. I mean, conservative management, targeted acquisitions to grow their TMF business in countries like Spain, UK, maybe Germany, because they are where they have a strong footing and they and they have strong management in place, but small ones. They did one or two this year, for instance. But so mostly using the free cash flow to give money back to shareholders. So basically, that's what I expect. Then obviously, because the guy is 80, you have to think about a kind of succession plan or anything. So we know he will not give the company again to his son. So basically, that makes me think that he will sell it at some point. He's still quite active. He's still communicating when he's doing his investor meetings twice a year. So you can see him twice a year. It's I encourage everybody to do it. I'm not under the impression that he's currently trying to sell the company. But obviously, at a 3 to 5 year horizon, it's obviously something which will probably happen, I guess. But as long as he feels fit, he will keep running the company. So no big intentions to sell, in my view, in the short term, but obviously a question which will come back in for the midterm. So yeah, that's the situation. But I mean, we should expect like conservative capital allocation for the next year. So probably stable dividend or even increasing dividend, and opportunistic buybacks when the stock price is as cheap as it is today.
And it sounds like all three business segments are strategic to the company, and there are synergies here. I'm just wondering if any one of the business segments you could see as perhaps not being as attractive long term, and perhaps you know, that the company could highlight value by thinking about spinning out some part of the business or some other, you know, way to kind of highlight the value of the sum of the parts.
No, it's a very good question. It's a very good question because, I mean, it makes sense that the three businesses are together because, like, all three businesses are focused on basically like workspace management and desk management. So both the services part, which by the way is enjoying kind of a growth, like maybe somewhat structural growth through work from home development in a company and so on, because it makes that management more complex and you have more devices, so that's good for them. And like basically they distribute the products which are used there through the product and solution division, and they finance it through the TMF division. So basically, you have it's quite it's not like if one division was like stupid or didn't fit into the picture. So you have this strange situation where all three divisions have some synergies, and it makes sense to have them together, but at the same time, it's kind of unique to as a company profile because like their competitors in each division are specialized and they don't have the other division. So it's still worth asking whether it makes sense to keep the three together. I think that it has been done for a very long time by current management, so I don't think they would want to split the group. But I still think that if you want to maximize the value of the company, given you don't have so many people running the three division on their own together. I think that to maximize the value, you would have to sell each division separately to maximize the division, the value of each division, and to sell it to one of the competitors. So to me, if they were to sell one of those three divisions, to me it would signal that they are about to sell the other two as well, quite quickly, and that they are really that Jean-Louis Bouchard is really preparing for retirement. So yeah, to me, if they sell one of the divisions because they want to sell the whole company, and that they just want to maximize the price by selling the three divisions separately. But as long as he wants to run the company, I don't think they will split the three divisions, because like it's kind of consistent. And you have some synergies, which are not huge. They are not huge, but you have some cross-selling between the three divisions.
Okay, wonderful. Well, I will leave it there. Would just encourage our members to feel free to reach out with any further thoughts or questions. Louis, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us again this year and share an update on the company. We truly appreciate it.
Yes, thanks a lot. And feel free to contact me, and feel free to the company is running two investor relations meeting twice a year. So feel free also to come there. We can meet there and discuss further the case. Very interesting, I guess.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Goodbye for now.
Thank you, John. Bye-bye.